Today on Maine Calling, what to do with keepsakes, heirlooms, and other treasures of the past. It's a common conundrum, how to even begin sorting through all the old stuff sitting in boxes in the attic or basement, or what to do when you're charged with clearing out an older family member's home. Sure, it's easy to say, just give it away or throw it out. But what if it's a stack of letters your grandfather wrote to your grandmother during wartime, or photos that go back generations? I'm Cindy Hahn. It can be really difficult to get rid of items from our pasts. Maybe it's due to guilt or a sentimental nature. But often there's good reason to keep certain items that serve as valuable records. Get tips on how to determine if something is worth saving, selling, donating, or keeping, as well as how best to go about preserving those memories. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling is made possible in part by Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal Down East communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling, and I'm Cindy Hahn. What do you do with old family keepsakes and artifacts that have sentimental or historic value? We'll find out when to donate, sell, or hold on to these items, and how to preserve memories for posterity. My guests are Nancy Prisk, genealogist specializing in Maine family roots. Amanda Kent is president of Maine Wicked Goods Mercantile in Freeport. And Bernard Fishman is director of the Maine State Museum. Join the conversation. Let us know what items you're wondering what to do with and what makes you hang on to things of the past. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And please note that our Maine Calling phone number is different than the one you've been hearing for Maine Public's fundraising drive. Again, the Maine Calling number, 1-800-399-3566. Amanda, I want to start with you because you have an antique shop, so you have people coming in, holding their precious items to bring to you, and you've, I'm sure, observed human nature. So what is it that makes people either really reluctant to let go of something or just want to get it out of their hands? What do you see?
Oh, we see quite a bit of memorabilia that is anywhere from a set of dishes to unusual items, a little bit of everything, really.
And how do people act though? I mean, do they feel like, I feel guilty about this, or I'm so sentimental?
No, everybody's really different. I mean, there's some people that just really want to let go of something precious, that they want someone who's going to appreciate it, receive it. Mm-hmm. And then we have people that, you know, they think their items are worth a lot more than maybe they are. And then we have a lot of people who, they just don't know what to do with them. You know, their mother really loved their collection of something and they could care less. So, but because she loved it, they really are concerned with how do I deal with it? What do I do? So we make recommendations to people based on kind of their feeling about things.
Well, we'll circle back to you about that because I'm sure people will want to know what do we do with X, Y, or Z. So I'm just going to cut over to Nancy for a second because, Nancy, we are doing this show in part because you and I had an earlier conversation about when you're doing your genealogical research, people learn about their family history and then someone will have old letters or family photos that hold some little clue about their background. So that's a case where it's worthwhile to hold on to those old items. How do you gauge when it's worth saving?
I look at collections. So I'm interested when someone says to me, I have letters from the last 150 years from my great aunts and their ancestors. And to me, that collection has some meaning. It may turn into a paper for a graduate student. It may turn into a research project for an honors student here at the university. It has value that could never be duplicate it. So that's when I encourage them to hold on and share, digitize and share. And if they say, well, it's just too much paper, I don't know what to do with it, then I help to match them with a museum or an archive, special collections, so that those stay together.
Are there some basic tips before you even digitize or anything if you're keeping them in your home so that they're not, in the bright sunlight or in a humid place? Like, what do you help people think through that step too?
I send them to a professional. I send them to someone who is an archivist for paper or for fabric. And I will tell you, there are papers that have come my way and fabrics that have come my way through clients who I'm doing genealogical research for, and they've not been kept well. My own mother had a quilt in the attic in Virginia in a plastic container, and it was from the 1790s. And it
Wow.
had just traveled. And when it went to the Smithsonian, it was in perfect shape. So we just don't know. So I'd also caution, don't disregard it because it's been sitting behind the fireplace for years. Just get it out and get it to a professional. And then I encourage that we do a genealogical search enough so that when it goes to a museum or an archive, that there's history behind it. There's a story. And that story can sometimes open the door to Maine Historical, Massachusetts Historical, in our case, the Smithsonian. But they want to know what it is. And then they sometimes want to know, are there other parts and pieces to it? So that quilt was accompanied by baby bonnets and an old pair of shoes and some men's stockings, all from the same family. So it had more
Well,
meaning.
that's a good segue over to Bernard Fishman with the Maine State Museum. Speaking of stories, that's what you're all about. But before we talk about that, I have to ask you, Bernard, give us an update on the Maine State Museum. What's the status of renovations and when will it reopen?
Well, I'm glad to say we have moved back into the cultural building in Augusta, moving our offices in. We've started to build the many new exhibits we've designed. We're probably roughly a year away from reopening fully to the public because of the time it takes to build those exhibits. We have had a couple of preview tours. We have, for instance, a huge whale now hanging from the ceiling in one of our galleries. So we may have more. So I hope people will pay attention. And we also are planning some introductory talks at three communities in the state over the next month or two to introduce people to the new exhibits and the kinds of things that we're doing. I always urge people to look at our website, Maine State Museum, and just keep up with what we're doing. So a lot going on. But we're not quite at the point of reopening the museum to the public, but that is coming. So watch that space.
Well, I know people can't wait. That's great. And I know also that the Maine State Museum has an incredible collection of artifacts and letters and photos, other pieces that tell Maine's history through people's personal items. So, do you welcome people to get in touch with you if they think they have something of historic value for the museum?
Yes, we certainly do. Now, because of the construction we have scaled down to a certain degree what we're taking at the immediate moment now, but we are very interested in people calling us, particularly so. We have a very large collection, hundreds of thousands of objects. But as Nancy mentioned already, the stories are most important. Some of our most significant pieces come from family histories, things that have been kept for a long time by families. But I should remind your listeners, and I'm sure most of you know this, life is short. Let's hope that art and museums are long, and what museums can offer are aspects of more permanent preservation for those relatively special things that tell something about a community's history or values. We all, we don't last forever. I go through many flea markets and I see things that were once cherished by families that are just on tables for anyone to buy. So, I think preservation by a museum or a well-developed historical society is probably the best way to go for more permanent preservation, preserving your own stories into the future. But of course, they have to have a certain higher value to the larger community or to history. But that's what museum staff can do in the museum committees. And if you have pre-digital photographs, write on the back what they are, gently, so you don't damage them, in pencil preferably. But if you pass away and that hasn't been done, 2 generations, my son will be seeing them on flea market tables.
Well, Bernard, I know you were a student of ancient history and Egyptology, so you know that it could be some tiny little thing that gives you a clue to history that you don't have any other, record of. So it could be a little chip of a piece of pottery or something like that. So what has come into the museum from personal collections that fill in those kinds of gaps that you've seen?
Well, there are archives. We have a bullet that was fired at a Maine soldier in the War of 1812 by the British, and that bullet struck this soldier in the mouth and took out 7 of his teeth. He endured the pains of rattling back in a wagon to the what passed for a hospital, but he survived. He kept the bullet and his teeth in a little box for almost 150 years and eventually came to the museum. But it came with a story. I mean, it's a wonderful story. He did marry. He had a, as far as we can tell, a rich life. But those stories are important. The information is important. And I'll just mention one or two things about Egypt since you brought it up. Egypt has produced wonderful finds because of its dry climate. Preservation is much easier there, and we should all know moisture and light are particularly bad, and temperature are, these are all things that need to be controlled. But we have documents from Egypt which are extraordinary, court records, a signature, we think of Cleopatra, all sorts of fragments that have been found very often in trash heaps and preserved in part because of the temperature. And humidity being conducive to that preservation. So do take care of your things, document them, write their stories. That makes them much more valuable for the future.
Well, Amanda, you know as well as anyone that whole saying, someone's trash is another one's treasure, right? And you mentioned already that you get everything from maybe, high-end antique items to just kind of knickknacks, right? So take us through the process. If someone brings something in, then what? Do you assess it and pay them a certain amount, or is it depend on what it sells for?
Depends on the person an awful lot. Some people just want to donate things and they don't want it going to the trash heap. They want to know that someone like ourselves are going to find somebody else who's going to love it as much as they did. And that's a really important thing quite often. But we are in business, so we do buy and sell, and that's really how we survive. We buy a lot from people coming in, but also from auctions and estate sales, and we make recommendations to people. So if I'm not going to buy it, if it's not something that, strikes me as something that I really like, I'm going to recommend that they go to a different way. So I'll recommend, if they want to sell it to Facebook Marketplace, or I'll recommend, various other dealers that I know specialize in certain things. It really depends on the person and what they're looking to get from it and their own personal relationship. Also, what we've been talking about is called provenance, which is the history of the items and who knows where it came from. I have people that come in strictly to buy old Bibles because it has a genealogical record in it, and they're sleuths, and they want to use that to try to find family members that are in there that aren't related to them at all, but they're really excited about the process of it. And then I have others who come in and will see something in the shop and immediately are reminded of their grandmother or of their great grandmother or even their parent We had one person come in, a woman with her two daughters, older daughters, and my husband had found this ice cooler, an ice bucket that had been made at Thomaston, in the prison there, which was in the shape, it was a wooden piece in the shape of an apple. And he had lovingly, my husband had lovingly polished it up and made it look beautiful. We had it sitting there, and the woman and her two daughters came in, and the daughter all of a sudden went, oh, like that, and then lifted this bucket up for both her mother and daughter to see, sister to see. And they all went, oh, and I'm like, okay, what's going on here? And without missing a beat, the mother goes, well, I know where I'm going to be. And I was like, what? Well, it turned out that their father had passed within the last 6 months, and they had put his ashes in an identical apple ice bucket because that was where he kept all of his cigar, not cigar, but his pipe tobacco. And it was his little humidor. He used it as a humidor. And they thought, what a wonderful place to put him. To bury. And so when they found an identical one, they were all so excited because the mother had been going, well, this was perfect for him, but what are you going to do with me? I'm not really sure I can have anything. So when they found this, they got all excited. And the mother was like, this is meant to be. So, some old things that you never know. How they strike people are really pretty, very heartfelt and heartwarming.
Wow, what a story. That is a you never know story. Well, thank you, Amanda. We are going to take a quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be back soon.
Well, it's a really remarkable program. Everything from the hot topics in the news to what we're listening to today here on Maine Calling, kind of stories about people's treasures, if you will. Good morning. I'm Erwin Gratz, local host of Morning Edition on Maine Public Radio, joined by Lucy Santerre. We're going to take just a brief couple of minutes here to talk about New Friend Friday.
Yeah, New Friend Friday is kind of an exciting day here in the studio during our pledge drives. New Friend Friday means that all first-time donations are being matched by a family foundation where all members strongly believe in the value of public broadcasting and its benefit to our society. That means people out there are hoping to encourage you to donate for the first time. So if you've been listening or maybe watching, visiting our website over the years, and you've never made a contribution, let us just say that today is the day for you. And we cannot wait to hear from you. We would love for you to give us a call at 1-800-866-1475. That's 1-800-866-1475. 1475. First time donors, we can't wait to hear from you. Every time a first time donor calls, there's a little bell that goes off, and those are just music to our ears because it means there's a new person in our community who's supporting what Maine Public does.
And and this is, of course, a very important campaign for us because, of course, of the $2.5 million a year that we budgeted for and then Congress rescinded. And so good news is we're going to be here. Maine Calling is going to be here. Morning Edition, All Things Considered. Wait, wait, don't tell me. All of the programming that you love to hear and consider vital here at Maine Public is going to continue, and that'll be thanks to you.
And what's so special about Maine Calling is that it's produced in Maine. You hear Mainers on the phone, you hear experts from across the state, whether they're from organizations, businesses, and there's just everyday people just like you who are calling in. That is such a unique, special program that Mainers treasure. And, those of us who are tuning into Maine Calling here on the radio, you know how great it is to hear information from the place that you live. And that is made possible by the people who contribute, who donate $10 a month, who donate $500 a month. And what's extra special for first-time donors, like we said, is that that amount is going to be matched. If you sign on as a first-time donor today, like we said, it's New Friend Friday. $5 becomes $10. $50 becomes $100. $500 becomes $1,000. Think of the impact on the programming, on the resources that let Maine Public do what we do. And it's just as easy as calling 1-800-866-1475.
Or going online to mainepublic.org, and then you can join folks like Kate from Westport Island and Lance from Topsom who have called us today. Thank you very much. Or Chuck from Damariscotta, who increased their current sustaining pledge. That would be a great thing to do if you're one of our evergreen friends. Increase your pledge, maybe from $10 to $15 or $20. Or whatever works for your family's budget. Takes just a couple of minutes. We've got folks to answer the phones, which, as you can hear, are going off as we speak. That's great. Thank you very much for calling in those pledges of support. The phone number is 800-866-1475. Online, it's mainepublic.org/donate. We're going to go back to Maine Calling. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. How many of us have grappled with a house full of items, from clothing to photo albums to wedding china, without being able to get rid of anything? And then there are the precious memorabilia that ought to be saved for future generations. Here with us today to offer some advice, Amanda Kent is with Maine Wicked Goods Mercantile in Freeport. Bernard Fishman is with the Maine State Museum, and Nancy Prisk, who helps people with genealogical searches and collections. Share your comments and questions. Have you found a good way to preserve valuable letters and photos? Do you have a story about a family heirloom? Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can comment on our Facebook page or on Instagram, or you can give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And joining us now is Catherine Liberty. She lives in Falmouth, and she's the sixth generation to live in a house belonging to the Merrill family. Thanks for joining us, Catherine.
Oh, well, thank you for inviting me.
Sure. Now, Catherine, you reached out to Maine Calling after a different show we did on Maine surnames with a question about what to do with old letters, which is one reason why we're doing this show today. So tell us about the house you're living in and what you've done to go through all those items that have been there for so long.
Oh, yes. The house was built in 1809. And has been in the family ever since. It's never. I think it's the only house in Falmouth that's never been sold. And I came to it after my dad passed away in 2015. And my brother and I took on the task of purging the generations of items that were floor to ceiling in the attic and in the barns and the carriage house. And we found a lot of interesting things.
I know that some of them I would have hung on to, but you had to get rid of them. Go ahead and tell us what they were.
Well, we found what's called a tower lock musket that was used in the Revolutionary War. And just going through the years, we had Civil War cap and bayonets and uniforms, hoop skirt frames, spinning wheel, butter churns. And we found a gold locket that was inscribed with awarded by Worcester Salt Company for the highest score salted butter in Augusta in 1900. So one of my great aunts must have been really good at making butter. All kinds of things, maps, tools. We have a crazy quilt. There's a player piano that unfortunately did not survive. It got damaged and but I have tons of piano rolls if anyone's interested. But the thing that I was talking to you in the earlier program about were boxes and boxes of correspondence that dates back to the 1800s. And I'm really interested in finding some software that might allow me to scan these fragile documents and just index them by names to and from and the dates, so I can preserve them, number one, but then also be able to make connections between the correspondence. So that's kind of my main drive right now. It's overwhelming. There are just, you know, so many, and I don't want to handle them too often. So I'm hoping I can find this software and just handle them once or just
delicate.
Find a way to serve them. Yeah.
Well, it is overwhelming, and thanks. And I believe that Nancy is ready with some answers, some advice for you. Nancy, go ahead.
Well, I thank Cindy for putting me and Catherine in touch. Catherine and I spoke last week, and I had a chance to hear some of the types of collections that are in there. And so my suggestion, Catherine, is to start with pencil and paper. I find if we start entering too quickly into a database, we don't have the right categories. So you may have already accomplished this part of it, but for those that haven't, starting by listing names, and do not discount the folks that married into the family, because sometimes those family members are, those extra family members, non-marital family members, are the ones that carry a story that is side by side or has a significant relationship to. So be sure to add into the categories in the indexes the non-marital family names. And then you want to look at dates, and you want to look at places, and you want to look at the people. And as you mentioned, the Civil War, you mentioned the things that were connected, things that have already been dispensed with should still go in your inventory. Because as Bernard was saying earlier, when these items come in and the museums can build a story around them, it really is significant. So even if it's no longer in your collection. As for specific information on software, I'm a little hesitant to recommend a brand, but I had done some research with some other archivists at some museums, historical societies, family groups. And what I'm hearing is that the quality of the software and the availability of it is improving tremendously because there are folks like you that are asking for it. And I know through my genealogical work that I do that both Ancestry and Family Search require membership. Well, Family Search doesn't, but Ancestry requires a paid membership. But both organizations keep their things actively out online for other people to see. And my suggestion is always to keep it private. This is your information. You don't need to be sharing it. So you want to look for an organizer that works just on your desktop and is not an online posted type of organization. And you want one that's flexible so that you can have columns under columns. You can post generations together as a group by sorting them, or you can separate the family members that have lived had lived in that house. So there are many ways you can make that flexible. One of the databases that I found was Past Perfect, and Bernard may have some more experience with that one, but I would start by looking at that, and I would talk to some museum directors and others as to whether that's a good piece to start with.
Well, Catherine, you have your homework cut out for you. I'm wondering with the other items that you found that were so interesting, have you been able to get those to any place that might be able to use them, or did you just chuck them?
No. It was a combination of things. Of course, still living in the house, I tried to make a nod to in each room to the past. So I have different things in each room. Then the family were interested in items, so some went out to family. We donated to the Falmouth Historical Society a few items, some maps and furniture. And then we did sell some things. Some of we had trunks and trunks of clothing, and some theater groups were interested in them. And tools from the trade that my family were house builders. And so there were tons of tools, and we were able to find a company that was interested in those. So just different outlets.
Well, boy, that's a full-time job, and I know a lot of people can relate, but thank you so much, Catherine, for sharing your experience. Catherine Liberty is a Falmouth resident and a Merrill family descendant. Let's go to Dave now, calling from Winslow. Hi, Dave. Go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Thank you. I love your show. I really do. So once upon a time, when my dad passed on, he had these trunks of artifacts, if you will, and I came across this small handheld brass bugle. And I said, oh, that's kind of cool. And I just kept it because it's a pretty little brass bugle. Years later, I was opening some of the trunks after he passed, and there's a photograph of my great uncle, my dad's uncle, from Milo, and he's standing there just posed and dashing and everything in his World War I uniform. Didn't really notice the bugle hanging off his neck, but I can picture the photographs. So I eventually found a military a hardcover book of Mainers who have been in served in the military, and I looked up my uncle, great uncle Elmer, and he was a bugler in World War I over in Nice, France, however it's pronounced. And I didn't put all this together until years later. My wife and I were moving from our apartment into our first house, and we had a yard sale, and I had this bugle out there on the yard sale table, and a lady really wanted to buy it. I don't know if I had $5, $10, $15 on it. And I said, you know what, I'm sorry, ma'am. On second thought, I think I want to just hang on to this bugle a little while longer. And she was begging me and upping the price. I said, I'm sorry, ma'am, I'm just going to keep this for a while. Well, I finally put two and two together. So I have this little 3x5, 5x7, whatever photograph of my great uncle in his World War I uniform. And I have the bugle that is hanging off his neck in the picture. And,
wow. Good detective work.
My prized possessions. Yeah.
And it sounds like you're not going to part with that, right?
Well, no time soon. I'm entering my, finally entering my retirement stage, and I want to, you know, hang the bugle and the picture in my house for a while. But ultimately, I'm thinking I'll probably turn it over to the Milo Historical Society, where a great uncle lived, and or the Maine State Museum. It'll be one or the other. But
sure.
Right now, it's just a nice pride piece and a story for me to tell.
Well, Bernard, is that something that the museum would potentially be interested in?
Certainly, potentially. Our curator would look over that, as your caller has told very interestingly and eloquently. There's a story there. So there's a name and there's a history, and that's even preserved in other documentary records. So that makes it much more significant. To have, for instance, just a period bugle that showed up without that kind of information would probably not be something that would interest the museum, but because of the story and the connections, this would. I'll mention just talking about attics and things of that sort. There's so many objects in the world. They're really burdensome when you think of great masses of them. So museums tend to have lists of the things that they're really looking for. We do, and I think most museums do. Again, story and the provenance is particularly important. But there are many kind of contradictions included in looking for objects. For instance, some of the things that were most common in the past for museums are now most rare. For instance, the clothes of working people. That's why Levi Strauss jeans go for hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, clothes that were everywhere. We have a working man's outfit that is connected with the Maliseet tribal nation. And it's probably the only one that has survived out of thousands that were frequently worn by especially people working in the forests and the border between Maine and New Brunswick. So if you do have an attic full of things that you don't know what to do with, give me or someone at the Maine State Museum a call or your local historical society, because you just never know what museums might be looking for and the kinds of stories they can tell with objects. Even sometimes if the objects don't have the kind of wonderful connections that your caller mentioned.
Wonderful. Well, we do need to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be talking with Deborah McLean, an antique dealer and downsizing expert, after the break.
Hi there, everyone. Happy Friday. The weekend is ahead of us, and we are having a great time at Maine Public's Portland studio. It's New Friend Friday. That means first-time donors are being matched. Hello, everyone. My name is Lucy Santerre. I do the social media here at Maine Public, and I'm joined by Local Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz. And we are here to take a few minutes out of this lovely Maine Calling program to share why it's so important for you to contribute to Maine Public to keep our services possible for all Mainers.
You know, and the number, by the way, is 800-866-1475. And Lucy, this has been a terrific campaign. It seems like every time we even start to talk to people, as we just did, the phones start to ring.
Right.
That's terrific. Thank you if you've called in during our campaign the last couple of days. And thank you for being the next person to call us. 800-866-1475. You can also donate online, by the way, at mainepublic.org. As you know, federal funding for public broadcasting has been eliminated. That will leave us short $2.5 million in this budget year and the next. But when you make those monthly donations, become an Evergreen friend, you can help us close that gap.
That's right. We rely on your support. We always have. Maine Public Radio, Maine Public Television, our newsroom has always been listener and viewer supported. And that is never going to change because we care about you. We do what we do for you. You're listening in your car, you're listening at home, maybe you're listening in your headphones on a walk, enjoying this beautiful weather, whatever you're doing. And whenever you listen, you can have an impact on making this service available. We're a nonprofit organization. That means we would love to hear you give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org and contribute there. If you visit us on our website, you can even take a look at some of the awesome pledge offerings. When you donate a certain amount, you might be able to get a certain item. One of the hot topic items that we've been talking about all week is the exclusive C bag by renowned Maine artist Eric Hopkins. Now, I've held these bags. I've looked at them closely. They're works of art, and those are available to people who contribute at a qualifying amount on a monthly basis or with a one-time donation. So if you'd like to see what that C bag looks like, I'll do a quick plug for our social media. You can see it pinned to the top of our Instagram profile and also on our Facebook page and our other profiles. And this bag is, it holds it all. And again, thank you to local artist Eric Hopkins for producing the painting on the bag.
Yeah, and we have them in two sizes this time around. The traditional size, which we're calling the medium bag, is available for a pledge of $50 a month. But the larger size bag is available for $60 a month. But of course, whatever you contribute to Maine Public should work for your family's budget. We like to say that the membership in Maine Public is affordable because you set the amount, and that is true. So give us a call, 1-800-866-1475. Or go online to mainepublic.org.
And to everyone who has already called in, thank you so much. Our conference room is buzzing with the sounds of volunteers and the phone ringing. So let's keep that momentum going. This pledge drive is a set number of days, but you can always donate and make a difference. So give us a call right now at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for your support.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today's topic is preserving memories, and sometimes that means finding a way to keep old items from past generations, or perhaps passing them along to a museum or a collector. What else can you do with memorabilia? Joining me today, Bernard Fishman is with the Maine State Museum, Nancy Prisk is a genealogy consultant, and Amanda Kent is with Maine Wicked Goods Mercantile. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. You can also send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, or you can post a comment on Facebook or Instagram. Again, the Maine Calling number, 1-800-399-3566. And on the line with us now is Deborah McLean. She's an antiques dealer and owner of Antiquities Refuge League. She's also co-manager of the Lamont Block Collective. Hi, Deborah. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. And I know that in your line of work, you get used to assessing when something is worth keeping and when it's not. How can someone approach that without being too sentimental or feeling guilty about, getting rid of their favorite uncle's coin collection or whatever it is.
Right. Well, one of the things that I tell people is your mother is not an old sweater. You know, your mother is not that dish. So if you really love the piece, take a picture of it. You know, if you can't keep it, take a picture of it. If, yeah. What you want is the memory, not exactly the item. So that's one way to hang on to stuff that doesn't really have a place in your home anymore, is to take a picture of it. Most of the people that I deal with have already dispersed the really important parts of their lives, their collections, or what they're trying to get rid of, to family members, sometimes to museums or to local historical societies. Now they're just trying to declutter. They're trying to get more freedom in their life by a little freedom from stuff. So,
and yeah, that's something. Go ahead.
If they've already decided that stuff has to go, you know, I help them decide what needs to go and where it can go.
Right. I understand you're somewhat of a downsizing expert. And I'm wondering if when you do that, is there a systematic way to approach it? Because I think everybody's just like, where do I begin?
Sure, sure. Well, one thing I tell people is to stop the flow of clutter coming in. So stop getting stuff. Make 4 piles. And that's, you know, you want to sell something, you want to donate it, you want to trash it, or you want to make sure that family and friends get it. So you set up boxes, you do small chunks of space. You're just going to do this drawer. You're just going to do that shelf of the china closet so that you don't get overwhelmed and so that you finish the task every time you start something. You want to be able to finish that drawer, finish that shelf. And the other thing I tell people is don't tell your sister and have her come over and look at stuff. The object is to get rid of it. So, you know, make your piles, and then when you have a bag for that you want to get to donate, there's lots of places to donate stuff to, you know, Goodwill and Salvation Army, but also your local charity thrift store, like Freeport Community Services has a thrift store, Hospice of Southern Maine, and they have some really nice stuff there. People are giving them really good items, not good enough for museum, but too good to throw in the trash. So lots of ways to send stuff out. You can take it to an antique store and see if anybody wants to buy it there. You can send it to auction, although there are fewer auctions in Maine now. Habitat Restore will take furniture and light fixtures and things like that. And, you know, you can always put it on eBay or Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. So there's ways to make money and there's ways to make friends with your unwanted items now.
Well, it sounds like you just have to be disciplined and not get distracted and follow those very organized tips. So thank you for giving us a call. Deborah McLean is a downsizing expert and an antiques dealer with Antiquities Refuge League and Lamont Block Collective in Brunswick. Thanks so much for calling, Deborah. We'll go now to Gregory Curtis. He's the head of special collections and projects for the Fogler Library at the University of Maine. Thanks, Greg, for joining us today.
Hi, glad to be here.
So more advice, and you're coming from a different perspective as a librarian. I don't think people know that libraries like Fogler are one place to turn when trying to figure out what to do with their items. So what kinds of items, do you accept?
Well, we accept all kinds of things. We try to keep it to either books about Maine or things by Maine authors. We also try to keep it to maybe manuscript collections or photographs. We have some other colleagues on campus that deal with artifacts. The Page Farm Museum deals with artifacts, but we really try to focus on those sorts of things, like you say, that are paper-based or photographic-based here in the building. What researchers would be interested in for history, but also for current events, because at some point today will be history in another 25 to 50 years. So just because it's something that you have today, you might think that it isn't history, but it might be useful as well. So one of the things that we really try, I try to, when I talk with donors and they call or email me, is to say, for instance, photographs. You know, if you are inheriting photographs and you don't know who the people are, there's no name or there's no location, it makes it real tough for the researchers down the road to know as well. So attribution is a real important thing that we try to stress with our donors.
Well, great to know about that. I think a lot of people aren't thinking along those lines. So thank you. That was Greg Curtis with Special Collections and Projects at UMaine's Fogler Library. Amanda, you wanted to add to that?
I was just going to say that there's a couple of other things that you can do also with your items. For instance, when you're talking about clothing of a favorite person or a parent, some people will make teddy bears or they will make memory quilts out of those clothing pieces. And there are people who actually will do that for you. So it's not like you've got to be the one to make this teddy bear, but they're really wonderful ways of preserving the memory of the person and taking all of that clothing and putting it in one smaller way. The other thing I wanted to mention was that, now I've lost my train of thought, like we all do. It's preserving those memories.
Yeah, there you go. That different meaning of preserving memories, and that we can relate to, too. Yeah. Nancy, go ahead.
I want to add to Amanda, because I did take a sweater and had a friend of mine make teddy bears so that my granddaughters have them. I am downsizing from closing a house out, and I have opened a booth here in Bangor at an antique mall. And my favorite thing to do is to sit and listen to what people are looking for. So I'll go in and price my items on site. I'm sitting there and I'll hear people say, oh, golly, I've got that same thing. And my kids are not interested. So my hot topic right now is, yes, give your kids a chance to be interested. It's not an assumption that the next generation doesn't care. But we have to be the teachers and we have to share that story. So that's where the direction I'm going in with friends and with clients, to say, talk to your kids, just find out, or talk to your cousins, find out where their interest lies. But I do agree with Deborah, who said, don't invite your sister over. It's not a good thing.
All right. And we only have a few seconds left. So, Bernard, I just wanted you to finish those thoughts about, you know, when you hang on to them, is it a burden or a gift to your next generation?
It can be either. Nature is dedicated to destroying everything. Nothing lasts forever. But it's a very noble and humanistic thing to do, to try to preserve things that are especially connected to people that you value, institutions, historical moments. But everything is finite. Be selective in what you pick, and appreciate the fact that history moves on and you might be able to contribute to it.
Oh, very profound words. Thank you all for joining us today. Nancy Prisk is a genealogist. Amanda Kent is with Maine Wicked Goods Mercantile. And Bernard Fishman is with the Maine State Museum. Today's sound engineer was Jane Donahue. And I'm Cindy Hahn. This is Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.
And Maine Calling will be repeated this evening if you kind of caught it at the end of it and are interested in what the rest of the program was about. And of course, it will also be back next week with another entire week of interesting programming, including Nick Schifrin from PBS, who's going to be the guest on one of the programs next week. Hello, I'm Erwin Gratz, the Morning Edition local host here at Maine Public, taking a few minutes of your time before we move on to our next program to ask you for this for a phone call at this number, 1-800-866-1475, or a visit to mainepublic.org on what we like to call New Friend Friday.
Friend Friday is it. That's right, Erwin.
And that's Lucy Santerre, our social media guru. And
Yeah, I'm so happy to be here with you this day, Erwin. So, you know, Friday's a great day. The weekend is ahead, and you want to go into the weekend feeling good. Now, one way to guarantee to make you feel good is to maybe, dare I say, dabble in a little philanthropy. That might look like deciding to contribute $10 a month to Maine Public Radio. Do you know what is extra special about New Friend Friday, Erwin?
Mm-hmm.
It is a match day. So that means if you are a first-time donor, that $10 a month will become $20 a month, or that $100 a month would become $200 a month, or a one-time donation of something like $50 would become $100. And that is a way of welcoming you into the community of supporters that make Maine Public possible. So if you are ready to take that leap and become part of the community of supporters of Maine Public, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org.
And that match for first-time donors is coming from a family foundation whose members strongly believe in the value of public broadcasting and its benefits to our society. And of course, we know that lots of people feel exactly the same way. That's why the phones have been ringing off the hook here for the last few days, which is great. If you have already made a contribution, once again, thank you for your support. We really, really do appreciate it. This, of course, is your last opportunity this week to make a pledge during Maine Calling, so please take a moment and do that. 800-866-1475. We've got several volunteers sitting around the table here in the conference room in Portland. They're equipped with computers and mice and headsets, and they are ready to talk to you. 1-800-866-1475.
That's right. We cannot wait to hear from you. Whether you are a longtime Maine Calling listener, you come back day after day for the new topics, or whether you are a vacationer and you are spending some time in Maine, we're so happy that you're here and we're so happy that you're tuning in. So if this service is bringing, you know, a sparkle to your day, if it's helping you feel informed and entertained on your drive or maybe on your way to pick up some lunch or dinner, you know, whatever you're up to today, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475. Let us know on the phone. Let these lovely volunteers know why you're calling, what show is, you know, urging you to support Maine Public and all that we do. Maybe it's a locally produced show like Maine Calling. Maybe it's a local host like Erwin Gratz, who you hear early mornings sharing local and national news. Or maybe it's some of the programming that comes from our friends at NPR, American Public Media, or some of our partners nearby, like GBH and BUR in Boston. So find that program, find that meaning, and, you know, put a price on that and pay it forward. Give us a call at 1-800-866-1475.
Or go online to mainepublic.org. As you've heard, of course, about $5 million that we were expecting to receive for our next two budget years has been rescinded by Congress. That makes it more important than ever that we have your support. We're going to be here. We're going to go on doing what we're doing and improve it. And we'll be able to do that because, of course, for the last 60 years, you have provided tremendous support. We're asking you to do that again right now. If you're an Evergreen friend, one of our regular monthly contributors, perhaps consider stepping up that pledge a little bit right now to help us close that gap. We are confident because we know you. 1-800-866-1475 or mainepublic.org. That's how you're getting in touch with us. We've already had a caller come in here in just the last couple of moments. Be listening in the background, too, for that little bell that will tell us somebody has become actually a new friend on Friday. 1-800-866-1475.
That's right. And when you're tuning into Maine Public Radio, remember that everything that we're doing is for you. We're producing these programs. We're airing these programs because it's what you like. We're listener supported and we're listener driven. We are a nonprofit service reaching into the far corners of the state of Maine, even into our neighbors in New Hampshire and Canada. Welcome to listeners from there as well. And we would just love to let you know that all of this is made possible because of listener support. So now more than ever, the fraction of our revenue is coming from listener support. Call us at 1-800-866-1475 or visit us at mainepublic.org.